Welcome to This Is Money podcast in partnership with NS&I. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and alongside editor Simon Lambert and I today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, victory after This Is Money launches a fresh campaign to help parents impacted by tax changes, form filling and red tape. Also today, the mortgage bonanza, where everyone's a winner. Would you be better off delaying your state pension, if you can, to get a bigger payout later? And a weekend abroad, including flights and accommodation, for under 60 quid, get away. All this and plenty more coming up. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, where safer savings set you free.
But first, form filling, one of the banes of our lives. But it's not just tedious. Do it wrong or not at all, and it could cost you tens of thousands of pounds in state pension payouts, in fact. This is money I've heard from many parents who are facing a poor retirement due to paperwork issues after their children were born. Now, the trouble stems from the controversial overhaul of child benefits in 2013. Well, enough is enough. Simon and the team are calling on the government to take action. A campaign, Simon, has been launched. Tell us more.
It has. Now, this comes out the back of the fact that there were some changes made to child benefit. If you have a individual parent earning more than £60,000, it doesn't matter which one of the parents it is, but if one of you earns more than £60,000, then you have to give back all the child benefit you get, or aka, in most people's minds, you're not entitled to it. Mm-hmm. If one of you earns more than £50,000, it's eroded away until that £60,000 limit. There were various accusations of unfairness at the time because you could have a couple where both people were earning and they were earning £99,999 between the two of them. And because if neither of those people was earning more than £50,000, they'd keep all their child benefit. But if you just had one earner earning £51,000, you'd start to lose it, or one earner earning £60,000, it would all be gone. However, this was an austerity measure. It, whilst considered to be slightly strange in the way it was introduced, people took it on the chin. And there's lots of people out there who just decided that they weren't entitled to child benefit. What emerged, however, is that what you needed to do is you needed to sign up for child benefit and then say you didn't want it in order to get the state pension credits that you get if you're not working because you're looking after a child. So if you weren't entitled to it, you had still had to sign a form that meant that you had registered for it, but you weren't going to take it, even though you weren't actually entitled to have it and would have had to pay it all back. Kafkaesque.
Yeah, but the reason being?
The reason being that because you need to do this if you're not going to be working whilst looking after a child, because whilst that's happening, you're accruing state pension benefits for the years ahead.
Right.
Now, for some parents, mothers or fathers, that might just be whilst they're on maternity leave for less than a year. For some, it might be a number of years. Many people, for example, might decide to be a stay-at-home parent for the first 2, 3, 5 years of their children's lives. And if you didn't realise you've made this mistake, you're probably not going to realise until much later. Now, when people have started trying to unpick this, it's turned into a bit of a nightmare. The government's defence was that they do tell people about this with a form that comes in their bounty pack.
When do they get those bounty packs?
The bounty pack is given to you by a bounty representative who comes around just after your child is born and hands you an envelope full of discount vouchers and various things like that. Right. My reaction to this when my child was born was to say to my wife, well, that's going straight in the bin, isn't it? We're not signing up to any of that rubbish. Get a load of emails, get a load of junk mail. And she said, oh, hang on a minute. I think actually there might be something important in there. And it's the child benefit form.
Wow.
So it's very easy to miss this just after your child's been born because you're not really thinking about filling in a form. And also, you don't necessarily know the form is in there. And it looks like a load of junk. But actually, the problems go deeper than this because we reported on a case this week which goes back before the removal of child benefit for people who are earning above a certain amount. And this is where the person who has originally claimed the child benefit, if another person stops working, for example, you swap over. So in this instance, the mother's name went on the child benefit form. They were both working. Then the father gave up work. They should have transferred the name on the child benefit between the two because that would mean he's accruing the state pension years, but they never realised that that was the case. And so he didn't accrue 10 years worth of state pension. And then when they tried to unpick it, it turned into such a nightmare that they got in touch with us to help them. So that indicates that it's not easy to deal with.
Right, this is all very confusing, Lee. So let's take a little look at that particular case there, because that was related to the form filling and errors that are made. And that actually resulted in a victory, finally, for that couple.
Well, essentially, Georgie, I mean, it is a complicated issue, and how Simon just explained it, you won't get it in a simpler format.
There was no criticism of the way Simon explained it. It just is very, very complicated.
It's very complicated, and Tanya Jeffries, who's our pensions reporter and who's launched this campaign...
Shout out to Tanya.
..has been looking into this for quite a while now, and actually... Just describing how confusing it is shows you that when you've just had a baby, you know, a form like this is going to be one of the last things that are on your mind. Number one that's on your mind is keeping the baby alive. And, you know, after that, everything else is a bonus. But it's very unlikely that you're going to be thinking about a form like this and filling it in. And as Simon rightly says, it's all buried in like a bounty pack that people might just miss or just go, well, I'm not entitled to that child benefit. So, you know, what's the point of me signing up for it or needing to sign up for it? And this, what's happened is we've had a number of people get in touch with us, and they won't let you backdate it now for more than 3 months. And that is a drop, you know, drop in the ocean for some people, including in this case.
Because grandparents can do this, can't they? And they can backdate it quite a lot.
And that adds another layer of confusion to this whole scenario,
hence
the campaign.
If you are entitled to it, why on earth should the government say that you can only have 3 months?
It's absolutely incredible. So this case that we were just talking about now goes back 10 years. And would have lost out tens of thousands of pounds worth of state pension potentially in later years.
Is this Raina Thurgood and Martin Rios?
That's right. So they swapped positions, as in the mother went back to work and he decided to give up work to look after the child. They've spent absolutely ages trying to rectify this with HMRC, and it looked like we were getting nowhere near anything getting sorted with it. Tanya launched this campaign last week, kept fighting the cases that we've been sent over, and then, you know, they've just come out and said, actually, no, you can backdate it now. We're going to make an exception in this case. So they've now been able to do it.
An exception in this case. This is an interesting point, because a lot of people listening might be thinking, does this set a precedent, therefore, and you're saying no, probably
not.
Well, this
is it. So this isn't, there's no precedent set here. So what they said to us, actually, is that where a customer makes an application outside of the window, with a three-month window, HMRC can accept it in reasonable circumstances. It's very wishy-washy language. It means they can kind of sort of just pick and choose whether or not they're going to allow you to do this or not. And it's just a real sort of muddle of red tape here. It makes little sense. And what Tanya's set out and is asking for the government to do is just to make this an easier, smoother process. And there's actually just some simple things that can be done to make this happen. And that's all we're calling for.
I'll get into that in more detail, Simon. But there's two big issues, I suppose, here. One was something that's been happening for longer than since the child tax benefits changed in 2013. And that was related to the form filling that we've just spoken about there. But there's also that issue of the changes, which you then have to effectively opt in for to be opted out of, just so that people know that you've got national insurance, right? Is everybody keeping up? Have I kept up?
That
here?
Is true. Yes.
Right. So while we had one victory for Raina Thurgood and Martin Riott, eventually, and that was related to the simple errors, we haven't got any sort of resolution on those people who, God forbid, just had a baby and clearly couldn't look through this pack of bump nonsense to find out whether they needed to opt in and therefore opt out. Was there not a better way of doing this?
Yes, there is. And because there's a common thread that runs through both of these elements that you described there, and that is that they are both mistakes. And they are mistakes that are easily identifiable as mistakes and actually, in theory, should be easily rectifiable. So what we're trying to say in our campaign, which is not, I think, an overly complicated request, is that some common sense should be applied here. In these instances where it is clearly obvious that someone just, A, with the case of the removal of child benefit above the £60,000 thing, and they just didn't fill in the form.
Yeah.
That it's obvious that they should have filled in the form. They didn't fill in the form. They didn't know about it. They weren't working. It's pretty simple to prove that they weren't working and they were looking after the child. Just sort the problem out.
Yeah.
In the instances such as this couple here, Martin and Raina, where they've obviously made a mistake, apply some common sense, and when people are applying and saying we've made this mistake, just go, right, it's fine, we'll fix the mistake. And also to make people more aware of the current situation. Obviously, we've been writing lots of stories about it. Why is there not a form handed to people when they go register the birth, for
example?
Exactly.
Or why can't you just automatically
a really
do it
simple
online?
Bit. So it's just to make it more obvious to people, because people are missing this. This is a problem. Mm. Lots of people don't miss it, but there is a sizable number of people who are missing it. And if people are missing in it, then there must be a problem going on with how people are being notified about it. It's a problem that if it's not sorted, is just going to continue to get worse. We're going to accumulate more people. And the more people that we accumulate who've made a mistake and need the mistake rectifying, the more work needs to go into rectifying those mistakes. And ultimately, the more expensive it becomes for everyone. Because if someone has to sit there and rectify a mistake that someone has made, a government employee has to do that, then it costs us all money in tax. So nip the mistakes in the bud, sort these ones out with common sense, and make sure people stop making the mistakes.
Lee, do we have any idea about numbers involved in this? I mean, clearly, like Simon said, it's enough to launch a campaign. Mm-hmm. But also, what have the government said in response?
We don't know. We can't put a precise figure on how many people might have been caught out on this. We can only go by some of the readers that have got in touch with us. And we've had a number of people get in touch. And you can still get in touch if you think this affects you or anyone you know. Just get in touch with Tanya at tanya.jeffries@thisismoney.co.uk. In terms of what the government is saying, someone that has actually been a little bit outspoken about this, and we're hoping to get sort of involved in this campaign or at least give us some sort of comment piece in the next few weeks, is Nikki Morgan, who is the chair of the Treasury Committee. She has expressed worries about this and has asked the government and HMRC to look into the problem of parents losing state pensions. So it suggests they know about it and that there's murmurings about this. But I mean, at the end of the day, how much this something like this takes priority, you know, for someone like Nikki Morgan is hard to say. I mean, I would have thought she's got her hands full with a lot of things. But we're hoping to get a little bit of a clearer picture from the government in the coming weeks. Obviously quite busy at the moment with the conference and everything going on. But we will keep hammering this home and this campaign home. And we're hoping that we can get this rectified. And as Simon rightly says, just to nip it in the bud now to make sure this doesn't happen in the future to people. And that people aren't going to be missing out on thousands of pounds of state pension that they fully deserve later on in life.
Simon, just finally on this one, what should you do if you do think you might be affected?
The child benefit form is available online. You can get it from gov.uk and you can also get it from Citizens Advice. It is mainly distributed to new parents in the bounty packs, but you can get it other places. The gov.uk, Citizens Advice, if you think it's you, get the form, sort it out, get in contact with HMRC, tell them that if you haven't been claiming it and you think you should have been claiming it. And I think one of the reasons why this needs sorting out, this is a column written by Tanya Jeffries, who's leading this campaign. And she said, who makes an intuitive leap between these two things, child benefit and your pension when you're an old age pensioner?
True.
Unless you were told, you would never know. And the government has made a complete hash of communicating the crucial link to parents. HMRC has told us it's updated the wording, but she says it still needs to do much better. The form says near the top, claiming child benefit can help to protect your state pension. And as she comments, that's very fuzzy language. It's not really clear what help to protect means. Rather than it saying claiming child benefit is essential for you getting your state pension. And even if you did then have some inkling that this might be something, it doesn't actually explain how it works on that form. You have to go off, do some Googling and find it out. So it seems like it should be the kind of thing that is relatively easy to fix.
You think? So even if that doesn't impact you or this doesn't impact you, spread the word.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, giving you the chance every month to win up to £1 million tax-free.
Now, talking of state pensions, your pensions agony uncle, Steve Webb, has been answering the question of a reader that I'm sure many people will want to know the answer to, Lee. It's, should I delay taking my state pension to get bigger payouts later? And if that's what I do, what would be the pitfalls? So what are the main issues and concerns here of your reader?
God, it's such a big question, isn't it? And it's actually a really difficult thing to sort of comprehend when you reach that golden age where you can start taking a state pension, whether to hold out for a little bit of extra cash or not, or to cash it in straight away. Basically, when you become entitled to draw a state pension, you're not obliged to take it. You don't have to take it there and then if you don't want to. You have an option of taking it later and receiving a higher regular amount. So deferring your state pension now, though, is not as attractive as it once was, especially for those before who reached pension age before the 6th of April 2016. There was more generous rules around then. But there are some circumstances which it's still considering, as we'll go into now, and there are some pitfalls, as you rightly say. And actually, there are some people in which deferring is certainly not a good idea.
Okay, well, let's get into those. But just, for example, give us an idea of deferring it, say, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah,
what sort of impact could that have?
So you, for each 9 weeks of deferral, you get an extra 1%. It means if you put off claiming for a year, your pension rate will be enhanced by around 5.8% once you start claiming. You won't get an increase if you defer any for less than 9 weeks. So it sounds pretty good on paper.
But as you just said, there are people that this should definitely not apply to.
And
this is
who Steve says probably wouldn't benefit from doing this. So these are people who are on income-related benefits, such as pension credit or help with rental or council tax.
Why might that be?
Those benefits already outweigh the slight increases that you'll get on state pension for holding off. So it's worth doing that. And also, once you start receiving the pension, any additional rate of payment could be clawed back in whole or in part from your means-tested benefits. So it could represent a poor deal if you defer it. So there's those circumstances. But then in some people's circumstances, it might be worth doing, as Steve has told us. So first of all, is those who are planning to work on past state pension age. Obviously, that's quite a no-brainer, because any state pension you draw is added to your taxable income for the year. It really isn't worth doing that. And a second group of people who it's worth deferring is those who expect to live a long time in retirement. But that's kind of difficult, isn't it? I mean, when you get to pension age, can you really turn around and go, oh, do you know what? I think I'm gonna live for until I'm 100.
Yeah, well, of course it is.
But obviously,
you
some
know.
People are in poor health. You know,
if you're in poor health, if you smoke a lot, if you drink
a
lot.
Exactly, and those sort of people probably this wouldn't benefit. Whereas some people that feel like they're in a really good sort of fit state to retire, perhaps, you know, approaching 70 and thinking, I feel as fit as a fiddle, you know, perhaps it could be worth deferring. But it's very much one of those sort of open-ended questions as to how healthy are you. Well, it's who knows what's around the corner type thing, isn't it? So it's a hard one to balance and think of and get correct, but it varies on people's personal circumstances. And when it comes to your state pension retirement, you know, you just got to give it a lot of thought. To be honest, I mean, every 9 weeks an extra percent is quite nice.
Simon, what were your initial instincts when you read that question?
Well, firstly, there is an element where this used to be more generous if you deferred. That's why people used to do it. Now it's not quite as generous as it used to be. But when you think 5.8% extra, it's pretty good. I'm not going to get 5.8% on my savings, am I? Steve does make a crucial point, though. You won't get paid that money for that year. So you need to balance out the amount of money you would have lost, that's an entire year's worth of pension that would have been paid to you, with getting it in the future uprated. And he said, as you get an extra 5.8% for deferring, you would need to receive a pension for about 18 years to recover the money you missed in the first year. That's just the extra money you're getting on your pension. So it's 18 years worth of that extra money. So actually, that is quite a long time, isn't it? And then when I read that, I thought, maybe that doesn't sound like such a good deal. Maybe you'd be better off taking your pension. But there is definitely a tax element here. If it's going to shove you up into 40% tax and you're going to lose 40% of it to the tax man, then obviously that calculation changes.
So it's whether you keep working, don't take it, keep working, take it, consider the tax, or don't work, take the pension.
People will have work pensions.
Yeah,
so if someone's got a nice final salary pension, then they might think, well, got enough coming in from there, I can defer my state pension and make an extra bit of money from it. But they got to work on the basis that they're going to have to live quite a long time in order to actually get the benefit.
Which goes to what Lee was saying. It's individual circumstance, right? So have a long think about it. Now, despite the recent interest rate rise and the governor's gloomy house price warnings, yes, I know he technically didn't warn about it, but anyway, it appears there's hardly been a better time to go mortgage hunting, and that apparently is for everyone. Whether you're a first-time buyer, remortgaging, or looking to get into buy-to-let, rates have scarcely been lower. Not only that, but lenders are also expanding their product ranges into areas that they previously might not have considered. So, Lee, what's going on here?
Well, as you rightly said there, Georgie, mortgage rates, considering we had a rate rise in August, have stayed towards record lows, especially in certain different nuances of equity and how long you're fixing for, et cetera, et cetera. But we haven't seen the rises that we were kind of...
We've spoken over the last couple of years, haven't we? Yeah. How low can they stay this low for that much longer, et cetera, et cetera? It appears they are.
And it's still incredible. So as you said there, it's all types of buyer as well. So for example, first-time buyers, mortgage rates for those with a 5% equity or 5% deposit are the lowest level since records began. I mean, that's according to MoneyFacts. So the average two-year fixed rate has fallen from 3.95% last year to stand at around about 3.73% now. That's a fairly sizable drop for people that have a small deposit. Of course, always say a deposit is the biggest hurdle for first-time buyers to get onto the market. 5% is achievable for more people than a 10% deposit would be, depending on where you're buying.
Lee, why were you surprised when you said across the board? I mean, you spoke about first-time buyers and record lows, but is it unusual to have lots of different groups? And because you'd think, if you don't know that much about it, if mortgage rate's low, mortgage rate's low for everyone, right?
Well, the reason why I say that is because of the whole discussion that there's been around buy-to-let and, you know, landlords being squeezed and perhaps not being as an attractive proposition as buy-to-let once was, especially in recent years. You might have thought that perhaps even buy-to-let lending might be going through a bit of a tough patch, but even that doesn't seem to be too affected by what's going on elsewhere. And let's not forget, you know, not only has interest rates gone up in August, but we've got Brexit looming, you know, property markets sort of blowing hot and cold. Indices are sort of showing a real mixed picture. We can't really get a straight view of what's happening with house price and everything. And whether I'm having discussions with friends and family members who are saying they're kind of putting off buying at the moment just because they're a little bit unsure what's going to happen come next March, which is a fair enough point, isn't it? Because there's nothing worse than thinking about buying a property. You know, whatever happens with Brexit next year, all of a sudden does have an effect on house prices, which has been...
How gutted would you feel if they actually did drop 35% exactly, and you just bought one?
Exactly. And that, but you know, it wouldn't, realistically, that wouldn't happen. But at the end of the day, it's starting to play into people's minds, I'm guessing. And for some reason, I kind of link that. You think, well, what's happening with mortgage rates? Are the good times starting to end for people about to buy a home or looking to remortgage? We've been banging on for years about record low mortgage rates. But at the moment, it seems to be just chugging along as is, which is really, I think, really quite interesting. But I still think there's such a big link between these low mortgage rates and low savings rates that are currently on offer. And people are absolutely starved of savings rates, as we've seen in the last few weeks when everyone's been absolutely getting excited over a 1.5% easy access rate. I think that says it all about that savings and mortgage balance, because at the end of the day, banks and builders sites traditionally would bring in savings and then lend it out in the form of something like a mortgage. But they've had some cheap funding that have been tapping into for a long time. Although the taps have been largely turned off of that. So when will we see mortgage rates start to rise?
I'll ask you the same thing in a couple of years' time. Simon's going to kill me for saying this, Lee, but on the way to the studio, I think actually you've got a better version of this story. Simon was stopped in the street, he's giving me the eyes, by a fan who wanted, isn't this right, Lee? Who wanted to take a selfie.
It was brilliant, Georgia. We stepped out the office, we were outside M&S, rushing down to get down to the studio today, and someone stopped Simon in the street and said, "Oh, you Simon Lambert from This Is Money." And Simon
was wasn't
like,
paid.
Yes, it wasn't paid. I mean, I was looking around, seeing if
April
Richard
Fools.
Browning was standing around and, you know, with a wad of notes or anything. But no, he wanted a selfie with Simon, got a selfie with Simon, and then started asking about the property market. So Simon wanted to know exactly what he should be doing with his buy-to-let.
The reason I mention it, Simon, not just to make you blush, but because actually your biggest fan is a buy-to-letter. So this part is just for him. So go on, tell us about what's going on in buy-to-let in terms of mortgage rates and... Is that a usual occurrence for you, Simon? People stopping in the street and taking selfies with you?
No.
No? Okay.
That's the only time that anybody has asked me to take selfies. Someone else did once stop me, actually. It was in Centre Parks and asked me if I was Simon Lambert from This Is Money.
You're joking.
That's not the first time.
That's amazing. Lee, has that happened
to you? No. I didn't tell you about that, and I didn't, because I didn't go to Centre Parks with Lee. He didn't grass me up either.
So if you see Simon in the street, do ask for a selfie from him. Simon, go on. This one's for your biggest fan. Buy to let.
Well, anyone would think with all these record low mortgage rates going on offer that mortgage lenders had, banks and building societies had loads of cheap money and were struggling to find someone to lend it to, wouldn't they? there's a lot of competition going on. There is still a lot of cheap money in the market. You only have to look at the level of mortgage rates. And the banks and building societies are struggling to fulfil the amount of money that they were hoping to lend out this year and therefore turn the profits. So they're squeezing down on prices, effectively. If you're struggling to sell stuff to people, you knock down the prices, which is reducing their margins a little bit, but they're hoping that they're going to pull in more people. That's evident in a couple of places. It's very evident in the buy-to-let market, where rates are essentially at record lows, despite the fact that landlords are seeing their costs rise, both through regulation and tax on the rental income, tax on the stamp duty on the way in. Many of them will still be turning a decent profit. Some of them will be struggling. But the buy-to-let lenders are obviously trying to attract new people into the market by offering them lower mortgage rates. First-time buyers, again, those 95% mortgage rates. I mean, bear in mind that pre-financial crisis, really the loan-to-value thing had almost completely evaporated in terms of mortgage pricing. It didn't make that much difference what level you borrowed at, whereas now it still makes quite a big difference. So there's a little bit more room for them to move in there, trying to drum up a bit of attention. I also think there's maybe something going on here where there might be an element that if you look at the property market across the country, some parts of the country are doing well, some parts of the country are struggling more than others. So London and the commuter belt and those expensive areas in the south are the bits that are struggling. Now, obviously, lots of people buying in those areas will be taking mortgages, and those mortgages will be larger than the mortgages of someone buying in the northeast or Manchester or something like that. So if you do have the kind of slowdown that we're seeing in that area, then a smaller number of people not buying can have a larger effect on the amount of money that's being borrowed on mortgages. So maybe we're seeing a reflection of that. What we are seeing, though, is that if you are the kind of person who is willing to battle it out with the uncertainty, and maybe we're at the moment of peak uncertainty about Brexit here, then you can go out and pick up some good deals. People are putting houses and flats onto the market for considerably less than they were a year ago. And if they're the kind of person that wants to sell and is being realistic with price, then you can probably buy that place considerably cheaper than you could a year ago. I mean, round near me, you could buy a flat for 50 grand cheaper than you could a year ago. You know, that's quite a big discount. And maybe if we do see a Brexit deal, some kind of soft Brexit deal, whether that's a firmer transition or a transition that looks like a soft Brexit, then you'll see a sudden bounce in the market. And people will think, oh, that was the time when people were most uncertain. That's when I should have bought. Or maybe not. Maybe we will just chaotically exit the EU. But I'm not so sure that's going to happen, even despite all of the troubles we're finding in negotiating at the moment.
Well, talking about bargains, with Brexit and the fall in the pound, travelling might not be the first thing you think about being that cheap, particularly to Europe. Or is it, Lee? Because a website is apparently promising to take the stress and potentially high costs out of your next trip. Now, This Is Money has trawled through the deals and found weekend breaks, including flights and accommodation, for as little as £57 per person.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to explain. too good to be true, because I tell you what, I've not gone anywhere 57, and I was caught up in the BA glitch thing, got a cheapo flight to Doha. It still wasn't £57, that's for sure.
Doha's pretty far away, because
still
compared to some 45-minute flights that were on this website.
Right.
Okay, so this website is called weekend.com, and it was actually pointed out to us by Richard Browning. Actually, he gets a second mention on the podcast this week. And I looked at it and I thought, actually, this is really interesting. This is a way that I quite like to travel. I quite like a city break. I usually book a flight and then I book a hotel separately. That's what I tend to do. So in the past, for example, I've flown to Copenhagen return for £20 just because I was flexible. It was Ryanair from Stansted.
You don't take carry-on luggage, though, do you?
Don't take carry-on luggage.
That's what ruins me.
Yeah, but I mean, look, it was for 3 nights. You can get away with having a 10-kilo bag that's small enough to fit in that fiddly metal, you know, trolley. You know,
I wish you'd see the action there.
May I point out that Ryanair have probably changed the rules about four times since then. And it's now impossible to work out what you can or can't take on a Ryanair flight and whether whether you will be charged.
That aside, I went there with a friend. We were there for 3 nights. We got an Airbnb for 120 quid for the entire three nights. So it was £60 each. Lovely Airbnb. You know, that is a holiday for, what, 80 quid. Lovely. Love that kind of holiday. And people always say, I don't know how you do it.
I don't know.
But you've got to be flexible, right? So you look at flights and you build it around that. If you can find cheap flights, you can usually, and then have a, before booking, I have a quick look at seeing what accommodation prices are.
Yeah.
This is actually taking kind of all of that out of it. And what it is basically, it looks at weekend flights from airports across the country. So it's not just London-centric. There were flights from Manchester, Birmingham, for example. And then it pairs it up with a 3-star minimum hotel in the destination that they have sort of trawling algorithms. So it has an algorithm that trawls through all the websites looking for sort of the best prices that you can possibly get. And then it merges those together for the flights and the hotel. And you can get a trip away for, you know, as little as 60 quid. And I've tried this. I had a real good look through it. I didn't want to write something about it without having a real sort of fiddle and having a look around it.
Yeah.
And I found lots of really good deals and thought we should do something on this. So we did. I think it's a really interesting concept. And it's also very good for, you know, couples that can perhaps take that last minute sort of break or want a little city break somewhere, perhaps a little bit unusual or a little bit different. Although there are lots of destinations in there that, you know, or places that you would have heard of. Also good for things like hen parties and stag do's and things, if you're trying to think outside the box and something maybe a little bit different. And when I was looking through these, all the ones that we looked at had atoll protection, which is really, really important, especially given the problems with Primera, for example, this week, who earlier in the year went on this massive blitz about the Stansted to US flights, and some of the flight prices were just incredibly low, and you were wondering if it could really
sustainable.
Sort of be, yeah, was it, the answer was sustainable? No. But there are still other airlines that have that kind of model and at the moment trading. So,
on that note,
but it is important that you've got that protection, and it's always important to pay by credit card.
Definitely. And on that note as well, talking about airlines collapse, what is this, the fourth European airline to collapse in just over a year? Is it worth getting that additional extra to your travel insurance if it doesn't come as standard, which most don't, to protect against, I mean, it seems ludicrous, doesn't it?
100%.
To protect against an airline going bust. But
Airlines are a funny business. You know, it's very difficult. The costs associated with running an airline, you know, there's all sorts of things that can be unforeseen. You don't know what could happen in the near future. Oil prices have been going through the roof. That damages profit margins. I would definitely suggest getting travel insurance when you book your holiday, especially in Europe. You know, okay, we've got our EHIC cards, which cover you for, you know, medical bills in the EU. But the danger is with that, people just go, well, I've got my EHIC, so I don't need to get travel insurance. Well, actually, travel insurance doesn't just cover, you know,
your
potential medical problems.
Things.
But, you know, well, as long as you tick certain boxes, but it will cover things like baggage and lost and stolen items and airline failure. And you think, well, airline's never going to go bust, but it is well worth doing. But back to the point.
What's the name of this website? Remind
us again. Weekend.com.
Weekend.com.
It's German-based, team of travel experts. They've built this algorithm. It trawls through all of these websites looking for the best deal. I would say just have a look on it. Be a little bit flexible with dates and see what you can find. I was finding some really good-looking, you know, accommodation and some unusual destinations, places that have even been on my list. Oh, there's a list for under £100 on the story, Georgie. I think Simon's got the full list.
All right, Simon.
Okay.
But proof of the pudding, though. So I think we should all go on our own separate trip, hopefully funded by This Is Money. What do you think?
So I'm going to say, bear with me here.
Okay.
Right? And if you're listening to this and you haven't read the article on This Is Money, go to This Is Money, find it on the homepage, or go to thisismoney.co.uk/holidays and you'll find it there. Because it's worth looking at the pictures of some of these places rather than just listening to what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Number one, we have a place called Bydgoszcz. Do you know how to pronounce that, Lee?
No.
Bydgoszcz. For £57 per person.
Where's
it's
that?
It's a city in northern Poland.
Okay.
The eighth largest in the country. I read that sentence. I was like, oh, yeah, industrial estate, grey, grim. And then I looked at the photos. It looks gorgeous. It's got this canal running through it. Brightly coloured buildings. It looks like it's got an old town. And apparently, an architecturally rich city, Bydgoszcz, please, Polish listeners, email in and tell us how badly I've pronounced that, has earned itself the name Little Berlin. The famous granaries along the Burda River and on Mill Island are one of the most recognisable landmarks in Poland. Other top tourist sites to visit include the... I'm not going to keep saying the town's name, so I'm just going to say the cathedral, the canal, and the man crossing the river sculpture. The Farrer Church is the oldest building in the city, erected between the 15th and 16th century, and is also home to a 16th century painting, Madonna with a Rose. That's as in the Mother of Jesus, not Madonna. Madge isn't that old. Number two, we've got the Algarve for £63 per person. The KR Hotel, Albufeira Lounge. We know the Algarve. Malta, people know Malta. And then we've got Poznan, that's in western Poland. And then bringing up the rest of the top five, we've got another Polish entry, which is Warsaw. Somewhere I'd quite like to go, actually. And the thing to remember about these Polish destinations is that they will be cheap when you get there. But there's also other places on this list. What else is available for under £100? We've got airports you can fly to with destinations nearby. Katowice, Sofia, Gdansk, Marbella, La Rochelle, Limoges, Vilnius, Dinard, Kaunas, Toulouse, Nantes, Côte d'Azur, Belfast, Costa Blanca, Majorca, Riga, Tallinn, Bordeaux, Frankfurt, Budapest, Edinburgh, Valencia, Prague, Jersey, London, New York, Paris, Munich. Everybody's talking about flying for less than £57.
Very good there, Simon. Very good. So, like I said, proof of the pudding, though.
Yeah.
Lee, do you take the challenge on at some stage?
I reckon so. I think it's worth
Can you
worth,
go? Worth, for worth, worth if anyone going. Does do this, please let us know.
I'm going to do some investigating and see whether you can get any snowboard places.
Yeah, it's a competition now.
Go to the Alps.
You can get the cheapest weekend break, Simon? You're being a bit specific there with your weekend in the Alps, but all right then.
We should do it. And I was going to say, actually, Georgia, I've been to a number of these places. An hour and a half away on the plane.
Did you pay 57 quid for it though?
Well, I'm probably not far off, and I'd much rather do that than pay 150 quid to go up somewhere north that's 2 hours away, and then pay 150 quid to 200 quid for a hotel per night, and it ends up being a crumbling old B&B that you don't like. Been to Malta this year, really nice. Other places on this list that I'd highly recommend: Toulouse, lovely city. That was really cheap flights and accommodation. Went to Belfast this year, that's very nice.
I've been to La Rochelle, that's nice.
La Rochelle's lovely. Been to Tallinn, went there on a stag do, small but nice. Budapest, what a city.
Lovely
place to go. Edinburgh, great. Valencia, way better than Barcelona. Such a better city.
If you're still listening and not bored by this,
Jersey,
telling about amazing holidays.
Jersey, what a beautiful place. The beaches and amazing. And that is expensive for accommodation, but it was on this website for under £100. So there's got to be some sort of bargain hotel option out there. What I'm saying is, go explore Europe for under 100 quid. Yeah. It's well worth it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Lee. Thank you very much, Simon. If you want to make a comment about the podcast, tell us if you've got a holiday for 57 quid. You have any questions for the team, or you want a signed photo of Simon. Simon?
is not offering signed photographs. is the end of that sentence. Email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk if you've got a problem that you need us to solve. We cannot promise to knock up something in a garage and rescue you like the A-Team, but we will try and help you with your problem. Tweet us at thisismoney. Come to the website and go to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all articles past.
And don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, creating millions of reasons to celebrate every month.